This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Connectivity Strategies, specializing in micro-targeted full-funnel media strategies for clients like WWE, Corona, First Watch, Coke, and more. Connectivity Strategy, national strength, localized approach. Visit them at connectivitystrategy.com and Tumi. Product quality and selection are key attributes that have made Tumi the leading international business accessory and travel lifestyle brand. Simply put, there's no product made like Tumi. I can tell you that because I have the bag.
Of course you do.
I've got the suitcase. Charlie Cole hooked me up last year. For more information, visit them at Tumi.com. And finally, No Kid Hungry. We are also proud that we make a contribution in the name of each of our 2019 guests to No Kid Hungry. Your tax-deductible donation will help us provide vulnerable kids in America with nutritional meals so they can focus on being kids, not being hungry. For more information, visit NoKidHungry.org. And Stacey, if you can, start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the CMO Suite. I'm your host, Sean Halter. It is our New York week. I'm calling it Legends Week, Stacey.
It should be.
Co-hosting with me is my good friend Stacey Horton. She's co-hosting and producing. Thank you very much, Stacey. And I have with me Jen Say, SVP and CMO for Levi's. Hi, Jen.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Thank you for joining me. I saw you probably for the first time in person. I saw you last year at Brand Week that you did with Adweek. And I thought you did just such an absolutely incredible job. And you're back in town as well for an additional upcoming event for them as well that's going on this week.
I am. I'm looking forward to it.
And so I tried to do the smart thing. I stopped by the Levi's store yesterday to make sure I had a very nice, new, great-looking pair of Levi's. How did I do?
You look great. Which store did you go to?
I was in Times Square.
Oh, our new one.
And it looks fantastic there. I posted some of that on my Instagram feed, and they were incredibly helpful and nice there.
Well, that's great to hear. Obviously, service is a priority. We are super proud of that store. It's our largest in the world.
I didn't know that, but see, I picked right, didn't I?
Yeah, you picked right. I know a lot of New Yorkers don't actually like to go to Times Square.
I can't blame them.
Yeah, but we're actually getting them because the store is so great. It's 17,000 square feet.
Massive.
So massive. Has a 500 square foot tailor shop where you can customize your Levi's.
They told me that. That was crazy.
Which is super cool.
I said, look, I'm a 29. I just set out my, I'm 5'6". On my driver's license, I think I'm like 5'8 or 5'9". My club age is 37, by the way. But they told me they can tailor that literally right there. I was like, I'm a 29. They're like, it's fine. Find a pair that you like. You can take them straight upstairs and they'll actually do it for you right there.
Dare I ask, 29 waist or inseam?
Oh, wow. That is so sweet of you. Oh my God. I'm a 32, 29.
That's just fine.
Just fine. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And you said your ex-husband was like 6'8 or 6'9 or something, right?
That's correct. They say men lie about their height and women lie about their weight.
Interesting.
And I lie about all of it. My height, my weight, my age. I'll take whatever I can get for crying out loud, Jen.
Just say you don't answer those
just
questions.
Just say don't answer that. So I want to make sure we get a chance to talk about your journey. And again, thank you so much. I might have even stalked you last year. And rightfully so, your team was probably like, well, send us some episodes. And last year, because it was our first season, I was like, I'll send you some when we have some. And now we have some, which is great. And so we've been getting some really fantastic guests, including you, which we are incredibly excited about. So talk about the Times Square thing. We're in New York. And so you were just talking about that. And you said it's how big is that store location?
Our Times Square store is the largest in the world. It's 17,000 square feet. So it's twice as big as our prior Times Square store.
But it doesn't feel, I mean, you guys did a pretty clever job, and I don't know in your position how involved you were or weren't in some of the happenings that happen, you know, all the way down to the store level. You seem like you're pretty intimately involved in lots of things that happen.
I am. I have a pretty broad scope for a CMO, and I'm very involved in store design and store development. I have a store design team of architects that report to me, brand environment, which creates the experience in a store. So we're super involved. I don't own the service piece of it. That's run by retail. But from a how it looks, how it feels, what the consumer journey and experience is in store, that all rolls into me. That store was a primary focus for me for about a year and a half leading up to its launch. And then, of course, the opening events and all the media that supports it falls under me as well.
Well, they did a great job. Again, you talk about something that size, and for the average consumer, even those that listen to this show who are mostly, again, CMOs or marketers, and they're trying to figure out how do I take my whatever store size that is and make it consumer friendly, of course, I was surprised at what the size was that you just said it was, because you don't walk in feeling like you're at a Macy's that's just wide open rows or a Target or something. You did a really clever job of helping to navigate the consumer through that experience. Of course, I will say, Stacey, the first thing I did when I came in, I said, okay, so tell me where menswear is. I'm going to guess it's probably downstairs, because we're always downstairs. But they said there was a few things over here. And then, of course, they were very kind. And they were like, but there's an amazing section for you. And so it was. It didn't feel that big, but they were very hands-on as well.
Well, this store is unique in the space in that most things are downstairs.
Yeah.
So women's was downstairs.
Yes,
so
that's true.
You weren't.
Yes,
no,
yes. You're right.
So the upstairs is sort of like a feature section.
Listen, I shop in New York. I'm always going downstairs. It's fine. I get it.
Well, that is the structure. It's unique in the store. So we have sort of a feature area upstairs.
They do.
Where
yeah.
we have a lot of exclusive product that's sort of New York Times Square specific. And we have our tailor shop up there. But then for most of the stuff, you have to go downstairs, whether you're a guy or a girl. But our goal with the store was to create something that truly embodied the stature and the scale of the brand. So it should feel big and impressive and world class, just like Levi's, but it should be easy to navigate and find that perfect pair of jeans or whatever goes with them.
And so I didn't anticipate us talking 6 minutes about this amazing store, which is nice, though, because, again, it gives us something different and interesting to talk about than the other interviews that I've heard that you've given, which are all really interesting and insightful. And as a CMO, you are a very forward, front-facing CMO, and there are many of those, but there are less women doing that than I wish that we could get. It's hard for us sometimes to even have women say yes to coming on the show, which seems odd. But I feel like you've been often a trailblazer to some extent, obviously clearly also from your background and from your sports background to some extent. You've always been very front-facing and you've always been very vocal about and passionate about the brands that you've represented. So talk about that for a second if we can. Why do you think that's a self-perception on my side that there are many, many more women that are creating their voice out there? Or is it that this is that time and that moment for more of them to say, I've got something critically important to say, and it doesn't matter whether I'm a male or female or woman or whatever, I've got a voice and that voice should be heard.
There's a lot in that question. Let's
I know. I unpacked a lot there, didn't I?
Let's see where to start and how to answer.
There's no right answer.
I represent the brand and Levi's and the company, Levi Strauss & Company, are really having a tremendous moment right now. We have such momentum. You know, it's a 165-year-old company, 145-plus-year-old brand. And we've had our ups and downs, and that's no secret, but we are experiencing such tremendous growth right now. We've just posted our fourth quarter of double-digit growth in a row. We've had five years of consecutive top and bottom line growth. But more importantly, and this is a bit more qualitative, the brand is really at the center of culture again. And we haven't been at the center of the story like this probably since the mid-1980s when I was in high school and all I wanted was to get the coolest pair of 501s you could find because that was the coolest thing you could have. So, you know, I think for me, it's less about as a woman leader, it's more about the brand deserves to be at the center of the story right now. And so, yeah, I want to put that story out there.
It's a great story.
It's a great story. And I think what's particularly compelling about it is we've done it by leading with our values. Not that we don't have the greatest jeans in the world. We do, whether you want it.
They're very comfortable, I can tell you, Stacey. They are very comfortable.
And cool.
I don't have mine on right now, but I do have a pair and I love them.
Listen, they're black. They're kind of a lighter color, but they have a little stretchiness into them now, which is a change from jeans when I was a kid. Like you had to squeeze into whatever the size was that you had, and now the fabrics have changed. And
yeah, there's a lot more stretch. Women were first to the party there. Women sort of demanded it.
Yeah.
And that really grew that jeans category for women in general. But now men have caught on. They don't always know that they have stretch in them, but they know they're more comfortable.
Listen, we have our winter weight and our summer weight just like everybody else,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I'm in my winter weight, guys.
That's
wait till you see this.
Non-stretch is coming back. I only wear non-stretch right now. It's funny. It kind of goes full circle.
It does.
There's something about non-stretch that really kind of holds you in. But what I was going to say before is what I'm really proud of and the message that I am really trying to get out there is the way that this company and this brand is and has always led with our values. Since the very first day that Levi Strauss himself landed on the shores of California and donated money to an orphanage, to this year when we continue to fight and be very present around contemporary issues like sustainability, LGBTQ equality, gun safety. And it runs from our corporate stance all the way through to our advertising, frankly.
But something's changed in the industry that now allows brands to really be able to do just that. You know what I mean? When I was a kid, You bought what you bought. You watched the commercial that you watched. You went and begged your parents to buy you a pair of jeans. You know, I feel like at the time, I had a pair of Levi's. I probably had a pair of Lees and some Wranglers or something, you know, back then.
Those were the ones.
But now something has happened in the world, which is great that brands can stand for something and maybe they feel safer somehow in doing that. I'm not sure. What's your perspective on that?
Well, I would answer for us, we always have, but it was sort of not polite to talk about it. You know, you just did the right thing. You didn't go out there and pound your chest about it. It was, we've always sort of had the mantra that you lead with profits through principles. We've always, I would say, chosen the harder right over the easier wrong.
Yeah.
A few examples. I mean, we integrated factories in the South in the 50s, way before it was legally mandated. We offered same-sex partner benefits in 1992. We were the first Fortune 500 company to do so. Nobody was talking about marriage equality at the time. I mean, that wasn't even like anything contemplated.
I tell you who wasn't. My grandma wasn't talking about it. I can tell you that for damn sure.
Yeah. But
wherever
so,
she's up in heaven. Yeah.
So it's part of our legacy. I would say what's changed for us is we talk about it now more publicly. And I think there's a few reasons why. I would say millennials and Gen Z want to know. They want to know what you stand for.
Yeah.
So we've just, over the last 10 years, I would say five really, gotten more and more public, more and more loud, more and more vocal about what has always been true because the consumer wants to know and they're embracing that. But we feel like one of the reasons we feel that we can do it is we really have a leg to stand on. So it's not sort of that we're doing it because it's in vogue. It's not like we looked at
the trendy thing to do.
Yeah, we didn't look at a grid and go, here's the opportunity to stand out. We have done this for decades. So it makes sense for us to be able to do it. And I think it's really believable and consumers really embrace it. Our fans embrace it from us.
Do you watch something like what Nike did and feel like that they're following a similar trend to some extent? Or did you have a perspective on something like that? And are you proud to see other brands do that? Do you ever kind of find yourself cringing a little bit with something like Gillette or anything? Again, I don't want you to answer anything that you feel like is controversial, but how do you balance that, right? You know, I think to your point, millennials want to know what you stand for, which is great because you can then stand for something and not everybody will agree with it. But how do you maybe look at those two and have a perspective on that if that's something you have any interest in?
Without
casting
sort of
a stone.
Maligning
yes.
any of my, I'll speak more generally. I applaud the effort in almost every instance. I think my sort of advice or what I would love to see is for companies to really sort of put their money where their mouth is. And so don't just make it about an ad, make it about your actions as well. We do a campaign for pride all around the world in all the countries that we operate in. We produce product, we do a campaign, proceeds from the product go to LGBTQ organizations, different one every year. But this is an issue, like I said, we've stood behind since the probably the mid-80s, I might be getting the year wrong, when it was really not all that fashionable to do so. We withdrew funding from the Boy Scouts when they said that there could be no gay scout leaders in the Boy Scouts. That actually really impacted our business. And so we've supported financially through our own foundation, organizations that support LGBTQ equality for many decades. And so I would just encourage companies to make it more than an ad. I think then it falls flat.
So I know you probably, and you've said it here and it's on some other podcasts and things that I've seen you talk about, the one thing I love about you is the fact that you do always bring it back to brand. It's easy to be kind of figuring out, you don't want to be a spokesperson, right? You're you. And clearly you've got very, you know, precise opinions as we all do. And you don't shy away from that. That there's a beauty in that. But I look at what you've done and I feel like if others aren't following that lead, they're just missing a chance. There's a risk that's involved with that to some extent, right? But you can't see Jen say, speak somewhere and not feel like you haven't left with something. And that passion comes out. How do you continue just to find that every single day? How do you continue to find that passion for the brand?
That's a hard question. I think
I ask once every interview, maybe there's something hard in there. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't work somewhere for a brand or in a company that didn't share my values. And so you're right. I stand up there wherever it may be. And you hopefully feel that. I don't want to have to fake it, so I'm not going to go work somewhere, even if it's for way more money or way more title, where I would have to fake it.
I want to say, too, in your youth, you were so dedicated, and it was such a routine, literally.
Yeah, Jen, you started as a gymnast, correct?
Yeah, I was a
professional. And
I was a, I mean, amateur because you have to be. But I was a very serious athlete. I had an unusual childhood. I started when I was about six, which isn't uncommon in gymnastics, and it was sort of after the 1976 Olympics, and everybody fell in love with Nadia. And you know, girls, there weren't that many opportunities for girls to do sports back then. It was right after Title IX, which required equal funding from universities for girls to do sports as boys. So this was a new thing. We're like 5 years into Title IX. Up until that point, girls took dance lessons. I mean, there wasn't soccer, all the stuff we see now. And so gymnastics was this opportunity, and we had just seen Nadia, who was a girl. She was 14 when she won the Olympics with however many
she kicked
teams.
Butt, too, by the way.
She was
amazing. Was just such a...
And so we could look at her as a child and go, I can see myself in her. And so little girls flocked to gyms all around the country, and I loved it, and I had an aptitude for it, and I trained very seriously until I was about 18 years old. I was the 1986 national champion, and I loved it most of the time until I didn't. It's a sport which we now all know from everything in the news, that is fraught with problems in terms of emotional and physical abuse and even sexual abuse. And I wrote a book in 2008 about a lot of this. It was a memoir. And so I've been in the public eye for that as
yeah.
well.
You did an interview for another podcast called CMO Moves where you talked really in depth about that part of it. And I found that really interesting. Stop listening to this podcast for a second. Go back and listen to that one. It's even better than this one because you really were able to kind of dig in. You talked about the book a little bit as well and the fact that when everything seemed to be kind of coming to the light, which is back to the point of the fact that you always seem to be a champion of kind of shine the light on what happens is whatever happens. Shine some light on what's going on here. And you were quoted, I think, extensively kind of when some of that happened as well.
Yeah, well, when I wrote the book, I didn't... You know,
what's the name of the book? Let everybody
called,
know.
Yeah, it's called Chalked Up, and it came out in 2008 from HarperCollins. Right before the Olympics in 2008. When I wrote it alone in my room, I didn't really think it would get published. I was a good gymnast. I was on the national team for many, many years, but I wasn't a famous gymnast, and I arguably was not a great gymnast. I was a good gymnast. And so it certainly wasn't going to get published on my sort of athletic accomplishments. I was writing it myself, and I knew it was going to be on the merits of the writing and the story. I didn't think it would get published. It did. I'm very disciplined when I want something, and I did not stop until I got an agent and until she sold the book. But I certainly didn't expect the response that I got, which was kind of crazy. I was excoriated by that community, which I was not really a part of at that point anymore. I'd sort of moved on. I worked
sure.
at Levi's. I had two kids. But I became, in a sense, a spokesperson for the sport, and at first was not really all that supported. But I wasn't afraid to say what I was saying because it was the truth. And even if people were
sure.
saying that I was lying because I was bitter, and I, you know, the general sort of pushback was, well, you weren't that good, you weren't successful, so you're lying, which never really made sense to me. And now what we've seen in the last 2 years with everything come to light about Larry Nassar, the U.S. team doctor who abused hundreds and hundreds of athletes in the USAG system as well as at Michigan State University is that, well, yeah, it was all true. The
yeah.
culture created this guy. So I continue to kind of be a spokesperson in a sense because I wrote this book, which for me was a way to kind of like close the book and get out of it. So it's all very
ironic.
And
then you're back in.
Yeah.
But it did help kind of... again, keep you maybe just reinforcing how you've built your own internal brand to some extent as well, which is just shine as much light on it, be as open and honest as you can with what's happening out there, and the truth shall set you free, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've never sort of thought about what is my personal brand, but I thought about what's the right thing to do.
Well, you have it out there.
Right?
You have a lot of personal brand
yeah.
floating around out there, Jen.
I'm sure I do, but I mostly focus on what is the right thing.
The right thing to do.
And why you're so passionate about Levi's.
And I do it at work as well. Look, there's lots of situations you'll be faced with in a corporate environment when you're at work where you'll be told to do things a certain way. And I always am asking myself, who is the person I want to be? Is that the person I want to be? If it's time to make a hard decision and let someone go, how am I going to do that in a way that lets them have dignity and integrity? And me too. I want to be a person that
yeah.
behaves with integrity and kindness. So you can do the right thing for the business and do it with integrity.
you wear a lot of hats as you're trying to follow that mantra, right? And so just as you said, as we kind of started the show a little bit, you're involved in many aspects of what happens at Levi's, and that's partly because you're also a historian for it to some extent, and that you've been there for, you know, for a while now. And so as you start to look at 2019, what are the things that excite you? What do you love about this business? What do you hate about this business? What do you wish you knew more of?
That's another big question. I think for me, what I continue to strive to do is define the role of CMO on my own terms, to sort of not let it be this box that is, you know, I just make ads and, you know, I'm an order taker for the merchants or the people that lead the business. I look at myself as a key leader, and our CEO does. I report to him, Chip Berg, as well as a leader that defines the path forward in the future for this brand so we can have another 145 years.
Yeah.
And I fight for that at the table with all the other leaders. So for me, in terms of what I want to learn, it's less about the sort of tactical things. You know, it's more about how do I lead this company, this brand, into the future? How do I help pave a path for us that allows us to be around in another 145 years? How do I make decisions that will allow for that? And how do I do that with integrity? How do I be that voice at the table?
You're a mom. You've got some kids.
I've got a few. Four, in fact.
Yeah. All different ages.
Yes,
think from what I read or from what I saw. Yeah,
or else they'd be quadruplets. Yes, I have a
I have twins. I can tell you that's hard enough.
I have a widespread. I have an 18-year-old who's a freshman in college. I have a 15-year-old, almost got his age wrong, who's a sophomore in high school. And then I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old.
So, again, I feel like as I talk to a lot of CMOs or marketers or VPs, those that are closer to my age, it seems like there's this push and pull that's going on with them right now. There's so much pressure and so much stress with now you need to know everything from a marketing standpoint, you need everything from a sales standpoint, you need everything from a development standpoint. And by the way, we need that on Tuesday. And you also get a little self-reflective of my kids are growing up and I want them to be proud of me, but I also want to make sure that they know me and they get to see me. How do you find that balance?
Well, I'm in New York this week and the little ones are here with me.
Where do you normally live?
I live in San Francisco. And
What's your actual street address number, just in case I happen to be coming by for some coffee or something?
Levi's Plaza in San Francisco.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. I live in San Francisco. You're free to visit me anytime.
Could you just send me some free jeans?
I can make that happen. I think we can make that
happen.
There
you happen. Go, Charlie Cole. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So how do you find the balance?
We like getting people in Levi's. Well, one thing, I would say I'm not a huge fan of balance in general. Like,
just
do
the term itself?
Yeah, like there's times when you're going to work really hard. There's times when you're going to, you know, be more into, you know, mom really hard. And I try to do
mom
all of
really
it.
Hard. I, like
I try
that term.
To do all of it at the same time. But sometimes, you know, you're just in a zone where one matters more. I always come home for dinner if I'm in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I limit my travel as much as possible. I feel like, you know, when I was younger, I felt like I was always failing at something. I wasn't quite all in work, and you hear this from working moms a lot, or I wasn't quite all in mothering because I wasn't there every minute of every day. But you don't have to be every minute of every day. Make the most of the time that you have with them. But it's not just about quality. It is also about quantity. So I'm home for dinner. I'm helping with homework. I'm involved. But yeah, I'm kind of going hard at everything all the time. So balance, I guess where I miss out is sleep probably.
That's such a great word. I miss it. I so miss it.
But
do you still run? Do you do anything?
I do. Since I had my fourth and final child, she's 2 and a little bit. Her name is
Ruth. Are you going to use a surrogate the next time? Kim Kardashian or anything
doing,
like that?
No,
no,
that's not for me. I am very much
all
back
in.
Into working out again because I knew... it just keeps me sane. That's the main thing.
So maybe that's part of the balance, right?
It is. And I take Ruth. We have a running stroller, and she comes with me oftentimes.
Nice.
I don't know. I fit it in.
Yeah.
I feel. But I think the main difference from when I was younger, sort of in my early 30s, is I don't feel bad about how I'm doing in any part of it. I feel pretty okay with it. And if I am away for a few days and I miss my kids, I get right back in there when I get home and it's okay. It helps to have an 18-year-old that I have a good relationship with because I knew I was away some when he was young and we're fine.
Yeah.
So I know it works
out. You know it works.
If you put the time in. Yeah.
We have twins. And so it's interesting to have twins because you kind of see like what part is them and what part of them is parenting. So I want to, we've got a few minutes left.
Yep.
Thank you very much. I told you this would be painless. How did we do so far?
Totally painless.
The last point that you just made, I want to go back to that for just a second because we try to make sure that when we have these episodes, of course, you want to talk about a journey. You want to talk about something interesting that's related to the brand. If I forgot any of the questions, I apologize. I'm sure I'll get a hand up or an email. But the last point you made, I feel like is maybe one of the most important and critical points that I haven't heard in some of your other interviews, or if I had, I hadn't caught it, I hadn't picked it up, which is stop being angry at yourself, you know?
Yeah,
it's hard. This shit is hard.
Yeah, women are particularly good at
yeah.
this, like being mad at themselves,
yeah.
hard on themselves. And a friend of mine once said, dads of this generation, no offense to dads listening.
It's all right. I'm sitting in a room full of three women and one more out here. I'm the only dude here. I'm at least trying to represent.
They all feel pretty good about their, you know, how
yeah.
they show up
Not
as a
lie.
Dad. Because in most instances, they're more present than their fathers were, right? Just generally, and I'm not
when that's the bar, right? I don't have far to go.
I had a great dad. He was very present, but you know, most fathers are more engaged with parenting now than their fathers were. They're not just, you know, they're on the weekends, they're with their kids, they're at all the games and everything and parent-teacher conferences. A lot of moms, I'm not even going to say most because we had a lot of working moms from my generation too, but a lot of moms were not there as much. I mean, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. She drove us to school every day, picked us up, drove us around. My mom spent more time with me as a kid until I moved away from home to do gymnastics when I was 13, but she spent more time doing stuff for me than I do. And so you sort of always feel like you're failing.
Yeah.
And when a friend of mine said that to me, I was like, it just released me. And I was like, I need to be happy. I am a driven person. I want to do this stuff in the world. I want to work. I want to write my book. I want to do all this other stuff. And so that matters too. And I can be a good mom. And so when I sort of let myself go of that comparison, which I didn't even know I was making, I stopped being so mad at myself.
And so again, whether you're the highest level, you're the global VP of this, or you're the CMO of a small brand, male or female, but certainly to some extent from a female's perspective, which I only gain from the people in this room, maybe again, that's just what you just said, which is give yourself some credit for the work that you're doing and stop, I mean, find whatever balance means for you, but don't think that has to be 50-50 of everything and invest in yourself. That's probably the thing I've, over the last 3 or 4 years, I've needed to do because I'm so driven is to do yoga, do some things that help me just calm my brain and fail sometimes, you know?
Yeah, and life is long. I mean, if you miss a few days here or there, if you're not working as hard as you can for 3 days because your family takes priority or vice versa, it's fine. It's about the long run. And the thing I would say don't leave out also is I am married for a second time. Like, you got to put time into that too.
Yeah.
So, you know, I try to sort of look at the big picture, the long haul. Life is long. You got a lot of stuff you want to do. It's not always in perfect balance.
So love your brand, love your job, find those pieces, but ensure that you're investing in yourself a little bit as well.
That's a good summary.
Listen, thank you. The 30 minutes went fast. And then I could talk to you for another half an hour, although I know I'd get the high sign like, no, you're not going to talk to you for another half an hour. We thank you for coming and joining us on the show. I hope I asked most of the questions that you found at least remotely interesting. I tried to mix them up a little bit from some of the other great podcasts that you've done out there and some of the other great interviews. Listen, if you want to find out more about Jen, she is all over the place. You can find her on LinkedIn. Stalk her there. That's what I did. Or go to a bunch of Adweek's events because she's there from time to time. And that's where I first met her and said, hey, do my podcast, and she was probably like, I don't know who this person is, but please, security, move him. And now I wouldn't say that we're friends, but at least we're closer. I can at least say hi to you now when I see you, right?
And I have your jean size.
And now she's got my jean size, so I'm in great shape. Listen, we want to thank you again, incredibly, truthfully, for all of the insight. For all of you that are marketers out there, again, I think if you don't take anything else away from this episode, I'm sure you'll take lots away because there was some fantastic stuff in there. It's invest in yourself and love on yourself. Am I right, Stacey?
And it's Legends Week.
It is Legends Week.
And
I was so excited about this one.
Yes, and we've had a lot of legendary brands with us. And this, by far, I think is probably my favorite.
Oh, blah, blah. Thank you. That's true, though. Thank you very much. Stacey, thanks. Take us out of the show. I wish we had more time. How was that?
Good.
Thank you
very much.
You
didn't ask the questions I didn't have answers for.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I didn't have answers for them.
But you hopefully you don't mind that.
No, I don't mind. The one that I was...